Ueno from Daiwa Securities. I have two simple questions. Page 25 of the presentation says that North America pre-GAAP after FX adjustment is down by 4% in terms of revenue. And is this because of large deals, or as you try to drill down with your strategy, are you struggling to acquire customers, or is it this stopping or slowing down because of a price hike? What is the factor behind this minus 4% of pre-GAAP on page 25? That's my first question.
Kevin, maybe.
Kevin?
Yeah, I'll take that one. This is Kevin Simzer. Generally speaking, and Mahendra mentioned this, we much prefer, it makes a lot more sense for us to think of us as an ARR company. I think those numbers are much more reflective of where things are going. And the reason why I say that is the pre-GAAP numbers are moving around quite a bit as we go through this transformation and we get the different pieces in place. We had a massive, massive positive quarter, plus 40% growth in Q1 of this year in that region. And so it's been rather lumpy. We feel like we will land with double-digit growth in that region by the time we finish the year. And it's just dynamics of how the deals are falling. I hope that makes sense. Perspective.
Yes, I understand. Now, Umekawa-san, you explained that you stopped the discount and there is maybe phasing in terms of a contract renewal with your customers. Well, discount. How much was the discount that was removed? I'm sorry, I didn't explain it enough. So for early renewal or maybe 6 months in advance, we do give discount, and it's not a dynamic discount, and we just remove that system. So it's just 2 to 3 months. It's not a big impact. So it is not a price cut. You're talking about early renewal. Yes. We were asking people to renew 6 months in advance for discount, and we were expecting them to renew at the same time as usual, but they didn't in Q3. But once the actual renewal time comes, they are renewing even without the discount. Oh, I see. I understand. So on a year-on-year basis, without the discount, this means that it doesn't mean that the price is really going up. You were just talking about the 6 months marketing impact. Yes, that's correct. So retention of the customer is still the same. So we are going back to the traditional Q1, Q2 kind of flow. I understand. Thank you very much. I would like to add some explanation. Single-year version renewal, we want to reduce that. In other words, in terms of absolute amount, three-year version and the price increase version and the value added, that will build up to a certain sizable number. And the one-year version being renewed every year. Well, as Kevin said and I said, ARR is important. If it's a three-year, then on the pro rata basis, it will go up. But if it's renewed on an annualized basis, it's easier for the customers to buy, and also the high renewal rate can be maintained, and that will make the overall sales more healthy. So going forward, maybe we will move to monthly payment, which might be even more desirable. That's very clear. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I would like to unmute the next person to ask a question.
If I could just add, I just wanted to add one other thing around the pre-GAAP question, if I could.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I mentioned that the pre-GAAP numbers are moving around, and I thought maybe I could give you an example which would help with that. And both Mahendra and I talked about it in our presentation, and that is, we're in this mode by design where we're moving more and more of our business from those perpetual licenses to subscription licenses. And that has a really big impact up and down on the pre-GAAP numbers. So that's why, that's another example. That's an example and one of the reasons why we're really trying to be so focused in on our ARR numbers, because that perpetual to subscription mix change that's going on, it causes a really big impact on those pre-GAAP numbers. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. I'd like to invite the next person to ask the question. Yes. Tanaka from Morgan Stanley, MUFG. Can you hear me? Yes. Thank you. Kevin added some comments, but for APAC, the pre-GAAP growth of APAC is less, I think, diminishing, and this time was plus 6%, if I understand correctly. So I thought APAC was an area where you had a lot of momentum. However, how do you see the current status and the prospect going forward, please?
Yeah, so the Asia Pacific, Mediterranean, Middle East, and Africa region, that entire region, you are right. It has been a really big growth region for us over the last 7 or 8 years. We've been consistently driving double-digit growth, and we see that continuing. It's a very, very strong. We have, in most countries, we have either the number one or number two market share, and we see that continuing. In particular, in Southeast Asia, we see lots of opportunity still, and in the Middle East, where that has been massive growth for us. So that will continue. And again, this is another example where the pre-GAAP numbers don't necessarily reflect the reality. We've got a lot of movement happening with those perpetual licenses. Our perpetual licenses, actually, the amount of total perpetual licenses that we did in Q3 was down 11%. We're driving a lot of subscription revenue now, and that has a big impact on those pre-GAAP numbers. We don't disclose gross sales, but the gross sales numbers have been double digits in that region for many years.
Okay. Thank you very much. I have one more question related to something that you touched on that relates to active customer accounts, subscription and perpetual in Q3 or at the end of Q3. If you can share with us the actual numbers, I would appreciate that. Let me comment one on this. This slide has been disclosed since Q2. We don't disclose it for Q3 because total account, well, actually about 500,000 is included, and as Kevin's material referred to, subscription business about 330,000, I think, and so that business is growing, and the total number is it only 500,000 or 490,000, you might ask, and our answer, we don't really see that as an important question. So I just don't want you to misunderstand. That's why we didn't include that in the material. So about 30,000 customers, maybe Kevin can answer that question.
I'm sorry, what was the question on the 30,000?
No, my point was that his question was that the total number of customer count, we have not disclosed this time. And my point was that the total number of customers, the 500,000 or so, was not very material. We don't look at it. And we are looking at the 30,000 or the 28,000 you refer to. And so
yes,
if he wants to have some color on what's going on there, I already explained that the 500,000 we don't look at. And that's why we removed that slide. But yeah, 30,000, we can comment on that.
So we break our enterprise business down into two parts. One is small enterprise, which are companies with 500 seats and below. The other is large enterprise, which are 500 seats and above. So that's how we think of the world. The majority, two-thirds of the business comes from the large enterprise, and that's the 28,000 large enterprise customers that we have, and that is the one that we are the most fixated on right now. That's what's driving the growth. We are attaching Vision One, our market-leading platform, and we are expanding with additional modules in those 28,000 enterprise customers. You're going to start to see us actually expand into even more new logos as we go into 2025. But for right now, we've been very fixated on the 28,000 enterprise customers. In the small enterprise, the bigger number of customers, but the smaller dollar value, the bigger number of customers, that is very, very through a channel. And in particular, it's a managed services channel. And we're super excited because on October the 14th, we just introduced our market-leading Vision One platform to those MSP partners. And we feel that's actually going to enable those MSP partners to help grow their revenue. We will also be able to recruit more new partners, which will recruit more customers. So that's our strategy around our two different segments within the enterprise, large and small enterprise.
Tanaka-san,
did that answer the question, Tanaka-san? Yes, thank you very much. Let me add one more thing, if I may add. I think it's not just Mr. Tanaka, but others might have wondered why it is no longer disclosed. You might wonder that something is not disclosed because it's inconvenient on the part of the company. Well, maybe that was the background for the question initially, but as was explained, in the past, the subscription number or the perpetual license the total number of customers. At one time, it served as an important KPI, but those days are over. Large enterprises, approximately 30,000. We are really focusing now on increasing of the ARPU with these major large enterprises, and therefore, the continuation of the disclosure of that total number of customers may be even misleading. That's why we discontinued showing that. And we actually kept that disclosed for about half a year because we didn't want to cause any unnecessary confusion. However, we have further discussion, and we were able to see that without disclosing this, we wouldn't have misunderstanding. So we discontinued disclosing that. And large enterprise ARR is what we are really focusing on, and it's more of a key indicator. And so the total number of customers is no longer the key numbers that matches what we are prioritizing and focusing on. So that's why we decided that from this quarter, we will not disclose that number of the customers in total. I hope you understand. I just wanted to give you the back-end story. Okay, thank you very much. This is not a question, but large enterprise, 28,000 companies that you're focusing on, I understand that part, but those other parts that you're not really focusing on, the subscription accounts, for example, that phenomena of declining there, is it related to lack of satisfaction on the part of the existing customers? I was just simply wondering if that was the reason for this decline, but thank you very much for answering my question.
Thank you. Moving on to the next question. I will unmute the next person. Please wait for a moment.
あ、もしもし、ジェフリー証券の佐藤です。聞こえますか？
佐藤、ジェフリー Securities, can you hear me? Yes, we can.
一つ質問があるんですけど、
I have a question.
その上期の、
First half, pre-gap, and deferred revenue. I see some negative numbers or declines. I understand that you're shifting to ARR and the business mix is changing and that this is probably expressive of that. But looking at the second half, do you think the trend will be similar to the first half? Negative growth in the United States and Europe and APAC also not growing as much as it used to, like double digit. And also deferred revenue by region will continue to stay in the negative growth territory. Is that the correct expectation? I want to understand what will happen in the fourth quarter and the second half. And I'm wondering if this trend will continue into the first half of next fiscal year as well. Vision 1, ARR, I know you are shifting, but how do we interpret that? And the adjustment period may continue for two quarters consecutively or maybe three quarters consecutively. We cannot really tell that from the information that you have disclosed. It looks like the business is actually shrinking or decelerating if we just look at the pre-gap and the deferred revenue. It is actually difficult for us to read what is going on just looking at the ARR data. So we don't have enough information to be able to read the story. Can you please explain whether this trend will continue into the fourth quarter and also the first half of next fiscal year? Thank you.
Kevin, you want to comment on that?
I'll definitely take the pre-gap. Mahendra, maybe you can comment on
that. I'll cover the revenues,
That's a great question, and the short answer is no, we do not envision Q4 being the same as Q3. I think like we were trying to explain, maybe we didn't do a good job, but we've been going through a transformation process internally, and that's involved a lot of different functions inside Trend. We really were fixated on getting our operating expenses in line, and we feel like we've done a fantastic job, quite a nice job of actually doing that. We know we have the platform in place. We know we're getting recognition from industry analysts and from our customers that it's market leading. So we feel like we have everything in place that we need. And from what we can tell based on the pipeline that we have, Q4 pre-gap, it's why we feel confident in our guidance. The pre-gap numbers will recover. We will see some very good improvement. We'll see improvement in Europe, where we have a lot of business lined up. EMEA will continue to be strong, and there's a lot of opportunity that we have in America. So we feel really good about where we're at, and that the pre-gap numbers will in fact allow us to hit the guidance that we have out there.
から大丈夫ですか、佐藤さん。
Is that okay? Yes, thank you. And in addition, balance of deferred revenue, one of the reasons why this is going down is an accounting process. So anything exceeding 1 year, AR and deferred revenue are offset against each other. Ebara-san, do you have anything to add? I'm sure that Sato-san understands already, but just to make sure, I would like to explain once again what Inegi-san just said. Before accounts receivable, there is a big impact of FX as well. So on page 27 of the presentation, you can see that there is a big decline of deferred revenue, but 13 billion or more is coming from the FX rate difference between beginning and closing of the term. So it looks like it's going down, but even accounting for that, still the number is smaller. I think that is your question, Sato-san. If that is your question, the explanation given is, well, looking at constant exchange rate, still, I think the decline is quite apparent. Pre-GAAP number is negative, so deferred revenue ends up being negative as a result. And this combination, until the switch over completes internally, I was wondering if this trend will continue into the fourth quarter. That was my question. Yes. And based on that, there are a couple of things I would like to say. This is Q-on-Q, not Y-on-Y. So, Q-on-Q volume declined, but pre-GAAP is increasing sometimes. This happens. So, we need to account for seasonality as well. And unless there is a major event, this is not a major factor, so that's one thing. Another thing is more practical. And as was explained during today's earnings call, discount was applied to multi-year contract, and we are now trying to change them into single-year contracts as much as possible, which will bring down the pre-GAAP number, and of course the amount posted for deferred revenue will be smaller as well. So three-year contract converting into single-year contract. As we continue to see this shift, then we will see smaller additions to deferred revenue. So deferred revenue is down, sales is down, pre-GAAP is down. If everything is down, then your concern will be justified. But revenue is increasing, ARR is still increasing. So that just means that the contract shifting from 3 years to single year. Oh, I see. So 3 year contract to single year contract. This switch is happening, especially in Japan. It's not limited to Japan. So it had a generally big impact. Yes. So although they don't want to stop the contract, they want to change into single contract so that they can minimize the expenditure. One-off expenditure. Just to confirm, so three-year contract at the time of renewal, well, do you think this trend of shift it will continue for about 12 months? Shift from a three-year to single-year contract, will this continue for about 1 year? Because in public sector in Japan, I understand there are many customers on three-year contract. So in the month of March, let's say there's a lot of renewals, and a lot of them will be shifting from 3 year to single year, and all of those shifts are concentrated in the in March, then your third quarter numbers will look weaker. Would that be a correct understanding? Public sector is unique in that way. In private sector, there is no such restriction. For pre-GAAP, the numbers may look worse with a single year, but the revenue, the sales will go up instead. So I think you need to look at both numbers to make the judgment. I understand. Thank you. That's all from me.
Thank you very much. I will unmute the person asking the question next.
SMBC Nikko 証券菊池です。
菊池 from SMBC Nikko Securities. I have two questions.
まあ、今もう議論が集中してる。
We already had some discussion about pre-GAAP.
まあ、一応、Now, 社の言い分を、
So, considering what you have just explained, you're in a transition, you are restructuring, the marketing strategies are different, and perpetual licensing is going to be shifted more to the subscription customers. You're focusing more on the larger enterprises because it would push up the ARPU. So I think it's been going on for about 1 year now. So I think things will turn out to be better. So the to-be state after the improvement is made is what I'm trying to understand. The current ARR, I think 7% plus for the large enterprise customers and SMEs, 1%, consumer 1% on a dollar basis, I think. The total is maybe 4% increase. Now, so on a dollar basis, a 4% increase in the revenue is something that we should be expecting. Pre-GAAP, of course, will fluctuate, and deferred revenue, it's not so clear what it really shows, but ARR is what you think will be useful in the forecasting sales. So 4% is correct expectation, is my question. And also, so US ARR, when you look at it, it doesn't seem to be increasing much, 4%, or for large enterprises, 7%, but on a per region basis, how do they look like? Maybe you don't disclose that. Maybe the numbers are not that mature yet. I think you said something to the effect in the past, but it's about time that you give us some hints as to the region-specific numbers of ARR. So that's my first question.
Well, one of the things that we didn't want to confuse things on this call, at least I didn't want to, one of the things that you will see us start to do more and more is separate the two businesses, our consumer business and our enterprise business. Now what you see in our presentations is that we disclose the four regions that we have, and it includes both the consumer and the enterprise business in each one of those regions. As of the IR conference that Mahendra announced, we will be making a more clearer separation between those two businesses so that you can get a lot more visibility into the performance of each on its own. So you will start to see that as of the IR conference next week. So you'll that will be coming. Like I said, in terms of your question around the, I think it was specifically around the Americas. We do feel confident that we're going to finish with double digits in the Americas for the year. It has not worked out every quarter, but in Q1 we were plus 40% in the U.S. So it was very, very strong in Q1 and then a little softer in Q2 and Q3, but we feel like there's a strong performance that we're going to see in Q4. So you will see the double-digit growth for the year.
Okay. So ARR plus 4%. So the number in the positive is expected to grow, at least for the US. Well, consumer business is large in the Japanese market. So when you think about the growth rate in Japan, it might be less. But this 4%, if it were the overall percentage growth, then you expect growth and growth rate will go. And especially US will improve. Is that the right expectation that we should have?
Yeah, from an ARR perspective, you know, we laid out our road to 2027. And in that road to 2027, we said that we're targeting 8 to 10% net sales growth. That's what we're moving our way. That's what we're transforming our way towards. And 2025 will be an improvement over 2024. We're moving our way towards that consistent, repeatable, subscription-based, very predictable ARR growth in the 8 to 10% range. That's what we're moving towards.
All right, thank you very much. Sorry to go into the details, but Mr. Omika talked about Japanese ARR, 8 or 9, I think you mentioned. That's Japanese yen basis or US dollar basis? No, it is, of course, a yen basis. Enterprise was discussed on the Japanese yen basis. Okay, enterprise, you said was 8, was it? Was it not 9? 9, yes. Okay, including consumers, maybe not. Yeah, we're looking at them separately. Okay, I understand. I have a second question. Top line is a little concerning. I mean, worrisome a little bit. But on the other hand, you have profit, a lot of profit. You have reduced cost. That's one reason I believe, but cost management going forward, expense control. Well, 1 year ago, you said that it will be rather flat, but maybe the revenue, or the, rather the net sales, is getting a little sluggish, but sales will grow and then costs will be diminished. And then if that's the case on a quarter basis, maybe a profit of 15 billion is what you can expect, or maybe 16 billion yen, excluding the stock option related costs, is what you can expect. But if it's not a one-time thing, and you reduce the cost, maybe you can expect OP of more than 16 billion going forward. What is what you can expect, and OP guidance was about 50 plus billion, that is. So 15, 60 billion and quarter average, if it's bigger, then it should be above 60 billion, but approaching 70 billion next year. Next term, can we think like that? Cost operation, again, you will continue with this trend of suppressing cost and putting more emphasis on profit. Is that correct? Well, cost point. There is one caution I would like to mention for us. Fluctuation of the stock price is one thing, but also there are things that are linked to sales, and in the second and the fourth quarter, there are certain things that are affected. So fourth quarter and operating profit relates to the bonus payment, so I cannot really say anything about that yet. But sales and operating profit, you know, it's not that the performance being low, it would be impacted negatively, no. So I think the rest can be discussed by Kevin about sales.
Yeah, from I was trying to pick up on the question, and I wasn't sure if it was about Q4 or if you were trying to ask about 2025. And I think Mahendra was summing up Q4, where seasonally it's a very big top line quarter for us seasonally. And it also means that we pick up some additional operating expenses around sales related expenses. But we feel like the operating margin of 20% for the end of the year, that's what we set out and targeted, and that's what we will deliver on. We laid out in our road to 2027 still more operating margin improvement. So that will be our plan for 2025, to continue to improve our overall effectiveness as we go at the market. So we will improve our overall operating margin going into 2025. We will reveal that in Q1 when we release our annual results for 2024. We'll give guidance for that.
Okay. Given the actual capability that you have, the Q3 2 and 3 margin is based on your true capability. So, so profit of 15 or 16 billion rather is realized on a quarter basis. So OP for next year's quarter can be larger. I'm talking about next year. Well, next term, next year, of course, we are going to make the announcement in February next year. So as Kevin mentioned, you know, we have this roadmap to 2027, and we believe that we're on track towards that. And of course, operating profit margin improvement is something that we will continue next year. Okay, thank you very much.